Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Things to talk about on today's program. Well, we've avoided it as long as we can. The balloon boy, we'll get to the balloon boy. And also this week is the banquet at lifecommercials.com. This is going to be big. It's going to be great. I hope you could join us. And so to discuss the balloon boy, see, Steve Curtis, who's a founder of Life Commercials and the vice president of American Right to Life. He lives pretty much under the flight path of that Falcon Heaney, the balloon boy. And so I wanted to talk to Steve. Steve, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
My 10-year-old just reminded me that actually we weren't in the flight path of the balloon boy because the balloon boy wasn't in this balloon.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, just, you know, one of those small details. It keeps getting missed. But.
Yeah, maybe, Steve, before we invite folks in the audience to come to the banquet on Saturday, can we talk through this? What the story, you know, I'm busy. You're busy. We're trying to save the lives of kids who are actually being killed. Meanwhile, the nation was obsessed, and understandably so, because people thought there was a child in this balloon that could fall to his death. So that was understandable.
Sure. You know, anytime, you know, somebody sees a child in trouble or in need, there should be that connection, and we're happy to see that. It's unfortunate, and of course, we're spending a great portion of our lives trying to get people to make the very real connection between the baby in the womb, the unborn, and the imminent danger that they're in. And it's just unfortunate that people have such blinders on, that they want to believe that the baby in the womb is something besides what the baby is.
Mm-hmm. Steve, do you remember it was, what, it's over 20 years ago, that baby Jessica, the girl who fell down the well.
Absolutely.
Jessica McClure. And she was a year, 2 years old. And the whole country was so concerned about getting her, protecting, saving this one little girl, as the whole country should have been concerned. Of course, we should have been concerned for her and for this boy. But it turns out the family, it was a hoax. The family foisted this on the attention of the nation.
Well, I think it just shows you that people will get interested in whatever the media leads them to believe they need to be interested in. And we know that on the pro-life side of the equation, that for years the media has told them there's nothing to be interested in.
Right.
It's a blob, it's just some tissue, it's just a bunch of cells. That's not a baby. And people, unfortunately, not having even the most rudimentary understanding of science or spirituality or anything like that, have actually then just started to think along those lines, that there's nothing there to be concerned with.
Well,
and those people that could be concerned with just a blob of cells are somehow nutcases.
Well, we did a show recently about the New York Times questioning the validity of these abortion photos, which, you know, they found out plenty of evidence the photos are real. But it turns out that the New York Times is fake while the abortion photos are real.
Right.
That's
exactly.
That's how it turns out. So the media, Steve, you remember the rescue movement? I was part of the rescue movement, and we had families, grandparents, parents, kids, grandkids, with peaceful civil disobedience at abortion clinics all over this country getting arrested. The civil rights movement had 10,000 civil disobedience arrests, approximately. The rescue movement had about 50,000 arrests, but the media told the public that the rescue movement was just a small fringe movement and it was irrelevant. And, of course, the media supported the civil rights movement, which was fine, but they are so wicked because they're in rebellion against God and they like to kill unborn children, and hence the media bias.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I'll take it a step further, and I'll just say that Satan, who is their God, you know, it's got to be one of two. I mean, two great sources of spiritual power that work here on the earth. One is God, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, and the other is Satan, the fallen angel from the Bible, and he's not to be messed with. He's extremely clever and cunning and powerful. And those that reject God are following Satan. They may not know it, but that's exactly what they're doing, because there's only one of those two choices in that matter. You either follow God or you don't. So, you know, in tapping into that whole source of power that Satan has, the way that they just destroy the truth. And that's why they get so crazy about pro-lifers demonstrating, because they will do anything to keep that truth from coming to life. I mean, you know, John 10:10 says that Jesus Christ gave us a more than abundant life, but the thief, the devil, he only steals, kills, and destroys. He's on a path of destruction.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what they're helping him do, is just to stay on that path of destruction.
Right. Steve, George Tiller, the abortionist who was shot to death in Wichita, Kansas, his wife, his widow, was in Denver, as you know, Saturday night, and she was at the National Abortion Federation fundraiser at a hotel downtown, and across the street were enormous signs of unborn children who had been slaughtered, some of whom very possibly killed by her husband, a huge phone number, 1-888-AARTL, which is the phone number of the organization you're vice president of, American Right to Life. Inside the hotel, there were flyers that had the text of the GeorgeTillerMemorial.com with the photos George Tiller himself authorized of a baby he had just killed, the parents posing with their baby whom Tiller had just killed. It's all so surreal. And inside the hotel, not only were those flyers circulated, but there were posters inside the hotel saying, why would you honor the person? The event was called Remembering Dr. Tiller. Why would you honor a man who did this? And then, of course, also asking his widow, Mrs. Tiller, to repent of her support for the slaughter of innocent children. And Steve, you can see a lot of this at rememberingdrtiller.com, which was the name of their event, which domain name American Right to Life owns, or just tillermemorial.com. You could see it right there.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of us were hopeful that once George Tiller was dead, that there would be, you know, just some sense of remorse for the way he had lived his life in his wife, and that this might be her opportunity to break free, to get out from under the demonic influence that George Tiller obviously had over a lot of people, but certainly had over his wife.
Yeah.
And it's almost heartbreaking to see her now following in that same tradition of honoring the wicked, the immoral, the heinous, like George Tiller, instead of using this as the opportunity to say, you know what, I'm done dealing with that in my life. When George was alive, that's what he did. I was trapped in it, but at this point, I'm out now. And it's just sad to see her now.
It is a tragedy.
Right in there and just continuing the lies and the destruction.
But you know what I'm thrilled about? I'm thrilled that the social tension over child killing is increasing. We are not being mollified. We're not taking it sitting down. We are increasing the tension over child killing. No child killing with tranquility. And there is Tiller's widow at Denver raising money for the National Abortion Federation. And here are pro-life Christians right there exposing the wickedness of it all. Now, Steve, the balloon boy, of course, nationwide, there's a discussion of how should the parents be punished, and they should be punished. I'd like to read to you a quote from the Bible, which is a principle that we could use to try to figure out what's the right way to punish people who try to commit certain crimes. And in Deuteronomy chapter 19, we read this. It's part of a longer context on perjury and what you do if somebody's trying to commit perjury, which is sort of like a lie. But God says, you shall do to him as he thought to have done to his brother, to his neighbor. So let's say somebody's committing perjury against someone, and it has to do with a case where the punishment is flogging, or where the punishment is restitution of $1,000. And somebody's lying and saying, oh, so-and-so stole that motorcycle. And so it turns out that it's proved the guy's committing perjury, he's lying, he's bearing false witness, and the judge says to the perjurer, to the false witness, you know what? Not only are you guilty of perjury, but what was at stake in this trial was $1,000 restitution. You, as a false witness, you have to pay $1,000. And if the issue was, let's say it was an assault, and whoever's guilty would be flogged, then the false witness would have to be flogged. And if it's a murder case, let's say it's a murder case, and somebody is trying to help a murderer get away with the crime, as happens every day in America with right. false witnesses who commit perjury, as happened in your case, the Bonnie Bray murders, then God says that you shall do to him as he thought to have done to his brother. If someone commits perjury in a capital case, the punishment for perjury in that kind of case is death. You would be put to death, and thus people would not lie, but they would fear. They'd fear God, and they'd fear justice, and they wouldn't lie in murder cases.
I'll tell you, it would clean out the prisons because, you know, in our case alone, I'm just thinking of all the people that they brought out of prisons to testify. And, of course, they're all looking for an angle to get right. their own sentence reduced. And then you think about the ranks of the defense attorneys that just make up stuff as they go along. You know, in our case, the defense attorneys were up there saying, Frank Magnuson deserved it because he had gambling debts. Well, yeah. we know that Frank didn't have gambling debts, or at least there is no evidence at all that he was a gambler with debts that would cause somebody to murder him. They said he was a racist. There was no evidence that he was a racist or that race was a motivating factor. So, you know, in that sense, we'd get rid of a lot of these scumbag defense attorneys at the same time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that the threat alone, if it were known that it was more than an idle threat, just as capital punishment, if it were truly used and people knew, hey, if I get caught with this, they're going to do the same thing to me. I just have to know that that would be an excellent deterrent to people thinking about crime, certainly a deterrent to those that go out and kill, because then they would be captured and executed, and again, yeah. They'd never be able to kill again.
Well, Steve, if I recall the murder case, I'm thinking of a murder case in Denver back in the early 90s, and I think it was the Tom Holler murder case. Do you remember that name?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Tom Holler and his wife.
His wife.
In King Super's parking lot.
Yeah, and downtown Denver. And the guy who beat her husband to death, if I remember the story correctly, his girlfriend, so he's on trial, he's the defendant, the accused, his girlfriend perjures herself and says he could not have done it because he was with me all night long, and she gave details that she obviously made up. He was later convicted, and it's clear that she was simply lying to help a murderer get away with the crime.
Right.
So I went on the air night after night. And back then, we're on at 10 o'clock, Channel 53, full power on cable, on broadcast. And night after night, mentioning her name, mentioning the name of the judge and the name of the Denver city attorney, saying she is mocking you, Judge so-and-so. She's mocking you, the Denver city attorney, because she knows that in Denver, Colorado, you could lie with impunity because the judge wants to be lied to and the DA expects to be lied to. In week.
Well, and I remember all that because that was what they called Denver's Summer of Violence.
Yeah.
And that was when I first started speaking out. Our trials were over at that point. Our trials ended in early 1993. And so for the first time, I was out speaking out on issues and our trial. And I think it's at that same time that I met you and started doing both your television and radio show. So I remember that. And see, that is exactly the right message.
And
not only do you tell the people that did the crime, but all those that are helping them cover it up, lie to get away with it, including their attorneys.
Well, Steve, let me tell you something behind the scenes. I contacted a clerk down at the, you know, Denver City Attorney's Office. And I asked her, when was the last time the city of Denver had charged someone with perjury? And she said, you know, that's really interesting because a while back we put in a computer system that tracks all charges. And she said, I could do a search, but I've been around here a lot longer than the computer has. And it's my recollection that we have never charged anyone with perjury. She said, but let me do a search. And it went back, I don't know, 10 years or more. And she said, you know what? Not a single charge for perjury. And we hit that night after night that this woman was mocking the judge, mocking the court, mocking the justice system, mocking the DA. And she knew she could lie and she hasn't even been charged with perjury. And Steve, about a week later, she was charged with perjury.
That's stunning because I was trying to remember if I had ever heard of one. I couldn't remember, and I don't even remember in that case. Mm-hmm. I remember the case, but I don't even remember.
Yeah,
now that you bring it up, you know, it's.
She was charged with perjury, and I remember her lie. She said they were at her mother's house, and all night long she was being intimate with her boyfriend at her mother's house. That was the particular lie she told.
Well, she might be in actually more trouble with her mom for saying that than with the court system.
She should be, right? She should be.
Well, she
now,
should be.
Now, let's talk about the balloon boy and his family and what should happen. Now, you live in that part of Colorado.
Right.
And so this is the Haney family?
Yeah, I think it's Haney.
Haney.
And they're from Fort Collins.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was funny because I heard you talking about that on the air the other day. And then an hour later, I sometimes, because we're so far north, we pick up the station out of Cheyenne at 650, just down the dial from you.
Right.
And so after I was done listening to you, I dialed down and I was actually listening to Sean Hannity because you had mentioned that you had heard Sean Hannity say that the balloon is like the
angels. Like,
you know,
God had let it down gently, right? And we pointed out that this is superstition.
And within 5 minutes, I heard him make that statement, and I was just laughing because I knew it was coming. I heard the buildup to it, and then I knew it was coming, and I heard that. But at the same time, I was already questioning whether this whole thing could even be real, because by that time I had seen photographs of this balloon, and I just couldn't imagine that thing carrying, you know, a boy that far, and it just didn't make any sense. And of course, then they, you know, by that time they had also found out that he wasn't in there, and that whole thing just didn't, you know, just didn't pass the smell test. So,
well, when the local sheriff stated publicly that we have investigated and we believe it was not a hoax, here at Bob and Yurt Live in the studio, we talked about that he very well may be lying to the public in order to stay on the good side of the family, so the family will keep talking to him.
Well, and that's what he admitted to yesterday.
Yeah, and that very well could be exactly what he did, and if so, it was wise. So the parents who train their children to lie for this hoax to get publicity, what are they culpable for? How should they be punished?
Well, there's been a lot of talk about that, and I think the most obvious thing is that they are responsible for all the costs, not to the news media. The news media makes the choice whether to just run with something without verifying.
Well, that's a good point. Not to the news media, right? Not to Tom Martino up in his helicopter, but to the rescuers.
Well, the rescuers on the ground, if they had a police chopper in the air, or a fixed-wing aircraft. I know there were a couple of things tracking that balloon. Certainly everybody on the ground. And also, every last penny spent by the sheriff's department, the district attorney, any agency that had to investigate, and keep going back and going back because they kept lying and lying and lying.
And Denver International Airport had to reroute, close down a runway, whatever they did, it affected traffic through DIA.
And sure. So now you've got all those jumbo jets flying around up there having to go back out of their way, going, you know, coming in from the south instead of the north, or, you know, from the east or the west instead of the north, because they have to stay out of the area. And, of course, you can imagine operating a big aircraft like that costs an awful lot of money per minute, you know, to keep those big jet engines going. And then all the all the people that were delayed.
Steve, there was a wheat field that was ruined. Rescue vehicles ruined someone's winter wheat field. You know, there's just so much damage. If somebody is going into a bank to rob the bank, a criminal, and they put a gun in the guard's face, and that guard falls down and has a heart attack and dies, biblically, the criminal, even though he didn't intend to kill the guard, perhaps, the criminal is responsible even for the unanticipated consequences of his crime, the direct consequences. So is it hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars in cost from not only airlines and government, federal bureaucracies and local law enforcement, first responders, whatever that cost is? You know what's really something that you take into account? The fact that because of the natural compassion for an individual, for a child who may be at risk, there were tens of millions of people, Steve, even people working, watching, tracking this on their computers, tens of millions of people in this country alone who stopped working for an hour or two because of their concern that there was a child who might fall to his death. I mean, the productivity in America, if you could chart it hour by hour, that day, that productivity would have dipped dramatically, costing the nation probably a couple hundred million dollars.
I think, you know, as you really start to think about the financial cost of this thing, it's just unbelievably high, and it would obviously devastate that family if they had to pay it back. They should pay it back.
Yeah, they should. Whatever you can calculate and attribute to them as a direct result, they should be responsible.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I don't know how gainfully employed that father is. Obviously, they have some very poor parenting skills, and you know, I don't know if putting him in prison accomplishes anything, because then, you know, nobody gets restitution. I mean, I'd like to see the guy flogged and taken to task.
Flogged in a lifetime of restitution. Those are two really good starts. Hey, Steve, the banquet coming up. It's this Saturday, and
Saturday night, and we have a full schedule. As anybody that's ever been to a Life Commercials banquet knows, we're going to have live music and quite a bit of live music this year. Tony Funderburk is going to do an entire set. My son Jacob will be playing with him on a couple of songs. I've heard them together. It's good stuff.
Yeah, Tony is tremendous. Darren Streblo, comedian, nightclub tested, pastor approved. Humor, he is just hysterical. But then the night will get down to business, and you and Brian Rohrbaugh will be speaking. This is going to be a powerful night. And as it turns out, Steve, there are two ways for people to sign up. And Colorado Right to Life is so eager to promote your ministry and Life Commercials that they have a special deal only through Colorado Right to Life, a 15% discount if somebody gets their reservation through Colorado Right to Life. Now, what's the normal ticket price?
Normal ticket, if you go on our website or you just show up at the door and pay, is $55.
So $55. And in fact, people could still do that. You could use your PayPal account, for example, on the internet. Go to lifecommercials.com and get your reservation for you and your wife, your kids, whoever. $55, lifecommercials.com. Register right there online. Or you could call Colorado Right to Life. I'll give out their number, and make your reservation through Donna at the office there, and you'll get a 15% discount. And especially if you're bringing 2, 3, 5 people, maybe a table of 10, that could be very significant. 303-753-9394. That's Colorado Right to Life to get a reservation for this Saturday's banquet. 303-753-9394. Steve, where is the banquet?
The banquet is at the DoubleTree Hotel Denver North, which is the Boulder Turnpike, or I-36 and Sheridan Boulevard. You can see it right there from that intersection. Very, very easy to get to. Things start at 6 o'clock, and I mean 6 o'clock sharp because we have such a full night, and we don't want people there you know, past 8:45 or 9 o'clock at the latest. But Lee Martin, the author of 10 Minutes Till Midnight, will be there doing a book signing along with myself. Brian Rohrbaugh and I are going to talk about the crimes of the century, what he went through at Columbine, what I went through in the Bonnie Bray murders, and then, of course, the fun part, the music with Tony Funderburk and Darren Streblow and his comedy. It's going to be a full night. Terrific food at this place, or at least that's what I've always said.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have a great time. Steve, I'll be there with my wife Cheryl and our boys, and one of my favorite pro-life leaders, Will Duffy, will be there, founder of the Collaborators Project. And so if you are in Colorado on Saturday, you owe it to yourself. You want to come out and encourage everybody involved with Life Commercials. Come on out to the Life Commercials Banquet. It's in Westminster. It's easy to get to. And so, again, lifecommercials.com to register online via PayPal or via a credit card. Call Colorado Right to Life, and that way you'll get a 15% discount, 303-753-9394. Or, as Steve said, you could come and pay at the door, but it'll really help. Register in advance, and I'm eager to see you. We'll have a great time.
Bob, thanks a lot for helping us promote the dinner. You always do a great job with that, and
well,
appreciate
Steve,
the support of Bob Enyart Live.
All right, Steve, you're welcome. Can't wait to see you. All right, so we're out of time. Our website is kgovkgov.com. Please check us out. And in Arvada, Colorado, Maranatha, what a great school. May God bless you.